Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Even when you think you know a story, there's always room to understand or see more, to appreciate differently. And over the years, St. Louis and Katie Lee, the namesake culinary imagination and drive behind Katie's Pizza and Pasta, has shared the story of building an acclaimed food business. Katie has talked about who and where she was before reaching such success too. Her journey has included a years-long battle to overcome an addiction that started at age 13. And she's here with us today to talk about that part of her personal story and the autobiography she's written that starts with it. Welcome, restaurateur and now author, Katie Lee.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Happy that you're here. So, Katie, the story of your past is one that people who've been following food in St. Louis for some time that they know pretty well. But for those who aren't familiar, how would you summarize sort of what that personal story is, maybe as a teaser to what we're about to get into?
Well, I think it starts with this first chapter, which is I had an unusual upbringing. I had wonderful parents. My father was a junk picker, salvaged old abandoned buildings, doors and mantles. And my mother is a fine artist. So I grew up in artist studios and salvaging junk. So so that was unusual. And then dropped out of high school at the age of 14, 15, started working in restaurants full time, worked in many restaurants around the city. And during that time, battled with pretty bad addiction until I was around 23, started to attempt to get sober, was able to get sober long enough to open Katie's Pizza with my father, and then spiraled after the opening, got kicked out of the restaurant. I actually didn't own it. It was named after me, and I founded it, but it was his restaurant. So I get kicked out and lose everything to the point of all I had left was in a grocery bag. I didn't have a car or a phone or a home, and the only place I could go was a halfway house on South Broadway. So lived there for 6 months and then got sober. I've been sober ever since. That was 14 years ago.
Right.
And then built my life and my business from there.
So that is a very that's a great summary of the story. As I said, many people have some familiarity with, but that stop, the last stop is the name of the first chapter of your autobiography. Why is it that you began with an end?
Well, I think it was an end. It was a death for sure. But it was also, I think that life is full of death and birth, metaphorically and, in all of the lessons that we go through. And that was probably the biggest one for me. And it's where I had my transformation. Mm-hmm. And I still continue to have them. I had another one when my father passed away. But that was the big one, the big transformation that led me on this path, which I write about.
Mm-hmm. So let's take it back to one of the beginnings that is actually familiar for me. So the first chapter of your autobiography is in print form.
Yes.
And it's about the size of what an Alt Weekly would be, something that a person might pick up at a restaurant.
Right.
And when I opened it up, I recognized one of the first places I ate when I first moved to St. Louis. I actually used to live right around the block from Katie's Pizza on Clayton. And at that time, it was actually a splurge for me because I did not come here to a full-time job. But it felt like a place where something was definitely happening.
Yeah.
Why is it that you also included a photo of that storefront? I don't think there's anything in there yet. What does this signal to someone who is just starting to learn about you and your story?
Well, I think it was that photo represents, it symbolizes, I think, a transformation, like I said, of what can happen to a person when they go through a lot of pain and change. And that restaurant was the breeding ground, I think, for me to learn my greatest lessons. I founded it with two very important people, my father and my friend Rolando Lorena. And so that restaurant, that little hole-in-the-wall pizzeria, I think symbolizes how the love I had for them, the lessons I learned, and what I've built from there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just very nostalgic for me.
Right.
Yeah.
Where were you in your journey through or in recovery, which is, it's still present, right?
Yeah.
Where exactly were you when that shop opened?
Oh, well, let's start. A few years before we opened the pizzeria, I had a little junk store with my father, and we decided to take all of his stuff and open a proper store. It didn't have a name or a phone number or hours, but we had this little junk store, and it was my father, Rolando, and I. And that was the first time I'd gotten sober. So I got sober at the age of 23. And which tells you how bad I was, because that's pretty young to realize there's a problem.
Right.
And we started that. And so from there until the opening of the restaurant a year later, which was next door, and I was relapsing probably every 30 to 60 days. Mm-hmm. And couldn't quite get it, and struggling very hard, and was going in and out of hospitals, treatment centers, meetings, just trying on my own. And then I got hobbled together maybe like 90 days, and that's when we opened Katie's Pizza. I had spent some time living in Italy with my mother. I'd worked in many restaurants. I wrote the business plan, the menu, and I think my father and I thought this would be a good opportunity for me to have a second, third, fourth chance. So we open up the little restaurant, and the success was pretty immediate. A lot of energy and a lot of attention came from it. And the deal was, when we opened, that he would retain 100% ownership, but I would get to learn and grow a business and work for him. So we did that, and I saw this huge success and realized I wasn't technically an owner or part of it, and all of that pressure and attention and maybe resentment caused more relapsing, more struggle. And I eventually, like I said, got kicked out of that restaurant and spiraled pretty heavily. So that period from the junk store and when I first got sober and to finally living in the halfway house was maybe 2 or 3 years of just constant relapses, going into treatment centers, like I said, going into hospitals, and
And 2 to 3 years a fraction is a lot at a time when you were still very young, right? In your early 20s.
Yeah.
When you were seeing those first successes, was the struggle that you had with alcohol, was that something that people knew about? I mean, St. Louis has a reputation for being a big, small town. Yeah. Did you have any apprehensions or trepidation about people knowing that part of your story and then not giving your restaurant the chance that they should?
Yeah, I think I was very, absolutely very ashamed by it, didn't talk about it, but my reputation, I'm sure, preceded me, because I had worked in many restaurants and got fired from many restaurants. And, just talking about it, it sounds, I was, a troubled person. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And but I put on a pretty good face and really wanted to be sober and really wanted to be a good person and really wanted to be successful. So it was just this battle. And yes, very ashamed, didn't talk about it. I didn't mention publicly that I was an addict an alcoholic until I had 5 years of sobriety, because I knew that it was something that people had seen me over the years fail at, and I wanted to make sure that I had a strong ground before I announced it and shared it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How did it feel to do that?
Well, very freeing, and I believe in and that's another reason that I wrote all of this and am sharing it, is I believe life is a lot easier when you tell the truth and you're not hiding things. So, and I think it's also hopeful and reassuring to everyone out there, because everyone has struggle and everyone knows someone who's been through addiction or loss or failure. And so I think it makes people feel like they're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And over the years, you've talked about these struggles. I've heard interviews with you. I mean, is hearing yourself tell your story part of what motivated you to start writing an autobiography about it, like to do it with your own hand?
Yeah. Yes, I get asked to speak, and I would speak or do interviews, and people would always say you should, you know, write a book. And like, you know, I mentioned earlier, maybe I haven't, but I dropped out of high school at a very young age, and so I don't have a traditional education, and never thought that that was something that I could possibly do, because I'm not a trained author writer. I write a lot, just naturally, journal. But really the catalyst for this was my good friend Rolando died in 2020 in my arms. Mm. And then a year later, my father passed away, and he had been terminally ill and was struggling for a few years before he died. And so I lost these two people, and I was mourning and kind of on this search to figure out where they went, what this all means. And I went on this journey searching for them, really. Mm-hmm. And in the end, over the you know, year or two of mourning, started to figure out who I was, and had this awareness for the first time of who I was, the lessons that I had learned through my own struggles and through their struggles, and decided I feel very confident about myself for the first time. And so it would be, I guess, therapeutic, or maybe it was part of the mourning process, if I start to write this down. And I'd always had people tell me I should. And now I just had the confidence and the awareness of maybe what I'd been through and what life means to go ahead and do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's really what this book is about. It's about all of those lessons that I'd learned. And, you know, I've been through tough things just like everyone. That's the human condition. But I've also had a lot of wonderful things happen to me. And a lot of those wonderful things come from the pain. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We're going to take a very quick break, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation with St. Louis restaurateur Katie Lee. Katie is the namesake and owner of Katie's Pizza and Pasta, which has locations in Rock Hill, Town and Country, and Ballpark Village. Each now has the first chapter of Katie's autobiography, which will be released in serial print form. And we're talking about that work today. Katie, I'd like to give listeners a sense of what you've written and what it sounds like in your voice. I'd like to have you read part of that first chapter, which is called The Last Stop. And it's about a pivotal no that you got when you were in a state-run detox facility in Hannibal, Missouri.
I lay on my cot for 3 days, under the covers again, not scared this time, done, cooked. Start the timer. I'm going under. On the third day, I use my one call to call the one person we all have left when we think we have no one left. Mom. Mom, you've got to come get me. I was crying. Hard. Harder than ever. Not even a cry. A mercy call. A different sound. A howl when the moon is gone. Katie, I love you, but I can't. Click. That was it. No explanation, but I knew why. She'd had enough, and she knew I was dying. It wasn't so much that Mom said no, that Mom wasn't helping. It was that I finally understood that no. That no didn't mean, we're all worried you're going to die. That no meant, you're dead. So I died, right then. My last call was not for Mom. It was for death, and death answered. I can't explain it except that I died, right when the phone went click, like a gunshot. I lay back down on my cot, dead. I lay dead for a day and a night. If you're lucky enough to die, it's a beautiful experience. It was peaceful. A lot was lifted, removed. Color returned, more colors, every color, more colors than my eyes had seen. I no longer mattered, nothing did, only color. Color and that window. Thank God for that window.
And that is Katie Lee reading from her first chapter of her autobiography, which is yet unnamed, but yeah. The name of that first chapter is The Last Stop. Katie, that window.
Yes.
Talk to us about that.
So I was in this state-run facility in Hannibal, Missouri. It was a detox place, and I was in a small room with cinder block walls and three cots and two other women. And I was in that room for about 3 days. We were all chain-smoking cigarettes, and the room was filled with smoke. And like I said, I had this experience where I died, or my addiction maybe died, or something died, and I was about to transform. And I was stuck in this room, and luckily there was this little window in the room, and this window we were using to vent the cigarette smoke. And I just had this feeling that I had to get out of that room and you know, start my life for the first time. So I opened the window and climbed out and began walking down the country road and found a highway and put my thumb out.
Wow.
A woman came and picked me up and took me back to St. Louis. And that's when I moved back into the halfway house and, like I said, lived there for 6 months and started over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Katie, why is it that when you called your mom and she said no, that you didn't then sort of turn your back on her? There are lots of stories like that, right?
Yeah. Well, I knew that she had had enough. I had enough. I think in that moment of rebirth, I had this like awareness of what I had put my family through, even though I, you know, was struggling. And it's easy to say, well, look at me and look what I've, how hard my life's been. I had this realization that I've put a lot of people through a lot. And they, like I said, she has, it's not that she was turning her back on me, it's that she had was beginning to mourn. And that signaled to me that this is, you know, this has got to end, because they've all started the process of you're probably going, you are dying, you're dead, and we have to protect ourselves now and go through that mourning process. And so for me, it just signaled, okay, this is, I am dead, and what happens next? And next could be stay on that cot and continue this process, or jump out of that window and start my life again.
Mm-hmm. So what is it that a restaurant had to do with living?
Oh, gosh. The restaurant, I think, for me was, it was just that place that all of the good and the bad happened, and it was kind of all I knew. And you know, it's easy to turn your back on situations or your passion because you think maybe this hasn't worked so far. But I just knew that there was something about restaurants, even though they had been difficult for me and had bred a lot of the addictive behavior, that there was also a beautiful part to them. And I wanted to experience that beautiful part. I didn't want to just experience the dark side. So I wanted to go back into what I knew and loved since I was a little kid and always had done and write a new story for restaurants and myself.
And so looking out that window, you did spend time in Italy.
Yes.
How was that a window to where you are today and that is included in the first few chapters of the autobiography?
Well, I mean, it really was, you know, it was symbolic to, just like I said, this rebirth and this second, third, fourth, however many chances I had given, another chance, a transformation. So that window was really, it was like walking from, you know, a life of pain into a life of, you know, realizing my dreams. And my dream was, and has always been since I was very young, to create a space around food, specifically Italian food, because Italy was very transformative to me. And I have a lot of passion around Italian cooking. And so I just wanted to see what I could do with that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The people that you talked about your father,
yes,
Tom, you talked about Rolando. And each of them figure in these first few chapters of the book that you've written about your life. Why is it important that people understand who they are?
Oh, because, I believe we're all very, very connected. And I don't believe we're, you know, our own singular thing. And so for me, they're really part of me and I'm part of them. And so to not talk, they're actually almost in every chapter. I mean, they were very important to me and I believe are part of my soul and who I am. And so when I talk about them or share stories about them, I'm sharing about myself and vice versa. We're all very, very connected in, you know, this beautiful way. And so they, obviously being older and wiser and had been through much more in life, taught me so much. And so I can't share my story without sharing their story and all of the other characters that are in the book. It's really not as much about me as it is about the people that influence me, the people that touch me in good and bad ways, and, you know, St. Louis, the city that I grew up in, born and raised and worked in. And it, you know, all of those people, places and things have created my life experience. And so I can't just share myself. I have to share all of it to tell my story.
What have the responses been so far? I mean, this first chapter is one that is available at each of your restaurants.
Yeah, or Katie's.com.
Katie's.com. What have people said? I mean, are there aspects of the story that you're telling that people are especially drawn to?
You know, what's interesting is everyone that has read it and has given me feedback has relates to it, whether they've been through this specific experience of addiction or failure or not. They've all gone through something that I think the way that I tell the story is very, it's just part of the, you know, the human experience. And so I think it gives them, you know, just a safe place to maybe express things that they've gone through. So a lot of people come back to me with stories of what they've been through and how it's nice to maybe hear a similar experience and not be maybe ashamed of it. Yeah.
And that is something, the shame is something that you did feel before.
Oh, yeah.
Not anymore.
Oh, no.
This is also written in first person and in present tense. So it really puts you like where things are happening. Were there certain parts of this that were difficult to write and then maybe to read, where you needed to take a step back before returning to it again?
Yes. And so time is really instrumental in my writing. So I will write a chapter very quickly in very stream of consciousness form, give myself a break, and then come back and layer upon it and do maybe 10 to 15 rewrites on a chapter from start to finish before it's complete. And each time I give myself time in between and space to kind of process what I just wrote and go back. But I'll tell you, I've been going back recently, like, for example, just reading that now, you know, almost brings tears to my eyes. It is very hard. And they all are very emotional for me. And a lot of them are, you know, very positive and beautiful. The point of this book is to show, you know, what can the positive outcome that pain can have in your life. But yes, they are emotional, but like in a really beautiful way and a very healing way. And I think it's probably the most special thing that I've ever done as far as something that has been meaningful and creative and has filled my soul. So It's been great.
Yeah. I'm talking with Katie Lee, the owner and creative force behind her namesake Katie's Pizza and Pasta restaurants, as well as a growing line of fine food products. We're talking about her new autobiography that's being released in serial form. And that serial, one edition after another, not cereal in case, because we're talking about food here. Although cereal, I mean, part of what you're doing with the restaurants has something to do with that. We'll get to that later. Katie, you know, losing loved ones is something that we've talked about a lot on this show. You are in spaces that you filled and that you occupied with your father, Tom, and with Rolando. And then you mentioned that they are in every chapter of this autobiography. Has there been a certain point at which you really feel like you have like felt or heard them?
100%.
And I'll go,
yeah. No, they are very much with me. And I have a very strong connection with them still to this day, and talk to them all the time. They talk back to me, not in a weird way, but you know, like
right.
We talk to each other. And no, I will write some things down, go back a few days later and read and not even remember maybe writing it. And so I feel like that's a signal to me that maybe they're right there with me writing it alongside.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, but it's been a really beautiful experience with them and their spirit and sharing their story too, because they, you know, Rolando was a dishwasher that I worked with, and I met him when I was 10 years old in one of my aunt's restaurants and then worked in a few others. And then he followed me along my journey and worked with me in all of my restaurants. He was a beautiful, wonderful spirit, but maybe not seen by everyone. And so to be able to share his story is really beautiful and special for me. And same with my father, who struggled with epilepsy, addiction, and brain damage. To be able to maybe, you know, there were times that he was misunderstood, to be able to share the beautiful sides of him and the lessons that he gave the world. So those have been incredible gifts. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If I may, with memorable dishes, there are often different flavors, right? Different parts of the palate that they're touching. You've talked about the good, you've talked about the bad, and you mentioned earlier resentment about getting kicked out of your first business with your name on it, no ownership. About relapsing. And in conversations I've had with people who have struggled with addiction, they talk about recovery as a lifelong journey. Now, owning a business, let alone three businesses and growing the business, that is a lot of stress. How is it that you cope with those pressures and not turn to something that you knew could do something for you in the past?
Right. Well, I had a good enough experience with it that I know that I can't do that one anymore. But I won't say that I'm healthy enough and strong enough to not do other things, like maybe work too hard. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I can be, I still have an addictive personality and I can get into things. I am, but yes, it's a lifelong thing and it's part of my personality. It's part of my condition. And so I try to drive it into positive things, mm-hmm. right?
Such as?
Such as I'm very into my health and like I can go on a hike for, you know, 5-6 hours by myself and have the best time. Or I can, you know, exercise too much. I can work too much. I can, you know, just get into anything too much, mm-hmm. good and bad. And so I know I can't drink or do drugs anymore, but trust me, I'm not a perfect person. And mm-hmm. I fall into things all of the time and can become addictive and obsessive over other things. And hopefully they are, you know, good things. Like, took me a year to learn how to write and write a book. And
that's quite an accomplishment.
But it was fun.
Yeah.
And I think that addictive personality lends to those things. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, and since the time you first started sharing about that addiction journey, you are a mother.
Yes.
How has that, especially given the excerpt that you read and what your mother did for you, with maybe an answer that might have signaled something completely different to somebody else, how has the experience of motherhood put you in a place where you can write an autobiography like this?
Oh, gosh. Well, it's just beautiful to watch, you know, this human figure out what's going on in the world and where she fits in. And I think there's just this natural instinct for me to want to share how I did it and what I went through, maybe a warning a little bit, and maybe just, you know, that it's all going to be okay no matter what. I think that's ultimately what I've learned throughout life, is that it's always okay. We always figure it out. There's always a pathway forward, and that, you know, this is all meant to be. And I'm so excited for her to one day be old enough to process everything that I wrote and understand it. And I know that my dad shared his life with me in great detail, his addiction story, his struggles. You know, we dealt with his epilepsy since I was a young child, and that was difficult. And all of those things made me the person that I am today. So I was very proud of him and what he overcame, and hopefully she is as well. Mm-hmm. But
and on that warning note,
yeah,
what do you mean by that?
Oh, that this is, you know, what can happen, and this is, you know, life has some landmines in it and some things that can go wrong, and hopefully when she's old, like I said, when she's old enough not to read but to process it, she can look at this and maybe make some better decisions than I did. Mm-hmm.
Katie, do you feel like you are a comeback story?
You know, I do believe I am, but I really, like, believe that we all are. And I know that's corny, but I hate to think that anything that I've gone through is any different from anyone else. I know some of the stories may seem extreme, but I think if we all look inside and really process life, we've all been through stuff like this and some much, much worse. And I, you know many people. And so I think we're all a comeback story, that every morning that we wake up and keep going is a comeback. But no, I feel incredibly blessed at where I am today with my business, having a daughter, being sober and healthy, having a home, having a car, having a phone, having all of those things.
Right, right.
I write every day, you know, the gratitude that I have. And so I would say I'm very grateful, but I don't think my story or what I've done is any different from anyone listening.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of comebacks, people will be returning, I'm sure, to your restaurants and to katies.com for the next chapters of this. When can we expect those? And why is it that you're releasing it this way, not just in one fell swoop?
Okay, well, the next chapter will be released in January. So we're going to release every month a new chapter. We might speed it up depending on the feedback that we get. I wrote this body of work and then thought, okay, I can go the traditional publishing route, and that may take 3 to 5 years. You know, you just don't know how long it's going to take. And I come from the restaurant world, which is, we need instant gratification, things to happen now. And, you know, you have your service and you get it all done. And so I just have, you know, that's just the way I operate. And I thought, I've got to start getting it out there. I can't wait around for someone to find it or like it or, you know, do a publishing deal, even though hopefully that will be the case. But for now, I'm self-publishing. I'm doing it in the serial format because each chapter kind of is its own story. And I wrote that way, so it works. I mean, this is how they did it 100 years ago.
Right, right.
And the purpose of that was just to get it out to people as quickly as possible in, you know, the most reasonable way. And so I'm following that path. And yeah, I'm excited about it. I think I've always done things a little bit differently. And so this is another example of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll be looking
we'll
forward.
See if it works.
Yeah.
But the goal, eventually, yes, this will be a bound book. And hopefully a publishing deal.
Katie Lee is the owner and creative force behind her namesake Katie's Pizza and Pasta restaurants, as well as a growing line of fine food products. She's also the author of a yet unnamed autobiography, which will be released in serial print form. Katie, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
This episode was produced by Elaine Cha.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Dorr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.